Here, Winnipeg, Manitoba, a construction site at the end of Yeovil Street near the Seine River.
19-year-old Glenda Morrisseau went out with family on July 17, 1991, finishing the night at the bar at the Stock Exchange Hotel on Arlington Street and Logan Avenue in Winnipeg. She was last seen that night getting into an older model, dark-colored station wagon and was reported missing when she didn't come home.
Glenda and her family are from Saguin First Nation, an hour and a half from Winnipeg. But she had been living in Winnipeg and had been a student at R.B. Russell High School.
Glenda's body was found a few weeks after her disappearance on August 7, 1991, battered and half-naked at a construction site in St. Boniface at the end of Yeovil Street near the Seine River. At any time during this broadcast or afterwards, if you have any information that might help solve the case of the murder of Glenda Morrisseau, visit our website. Someone out there has answers. Our goal is to find them. Was Glenda's murder a random act, or did she know her killer? Is it possible to bring justice to Glenda's case when so many years have passed? What happened to Glenda Morrisseau?
Glenda was a popular girl who was loved by many. Rebecca Chartrand was Glenda's close friend.
Glenda had big dreams. She wanted to start a first all-Indigenous girl band. So she spent all of her money on a white electric guitar. She was serious about this all-girl band. I guess it wasn't long after that, you know, that she went missing and that she was murdered.
Sean Pike is a sergeant with Winnipeg Police Service and is currently assigned to Project Devote, a joint investigational unit between members of the Winnipeg Police Service and the RCMP.
Well, what I can tell you about Glenda Morrisseau is that when she was murdered, she was 19 years old. On July the 17th, 1991, she was out with her sister, other family members and friends, and they were out for the evening in Winnipeg. They eventually went to the Stock Exchange Hotel in the city. From there, they were in the lounge area of that establishment. Or at the end of the night, our information is that she left there with her sister and others going back to a residence in the Logan area. When she got back to that area, our information is that a vehicle pulled up with a single male driver in it, and she got into that vehicle, drove away, and had not been seen or heard of until August the 7th, 1991, which was the date that she was found. And she was located in the area of St. Boniface Industrial Area at the end of Yeovil Street, where she was found by employees that worked there.
Glenda's family was stunned by her murder. Like most girls, Glenda liked to go out and have a good time, but she was mostly a homebody who liked to spend time with family. Glenda's sister, Doreen Morrisseau, was with her the night she was taken.
She was a very beautiful girl. She always stuck beside my mom. She wasn't a troublemaker. She was a friendly girl. Because we used to live on 776 Logan Avenue, and that's where that guy took her from. I had the key to get in, and as soon as I turned around, she was gone. So, and I went yelling around. And I went upstairs, and my mom and dad were asleep. So the next morning, I said, she's not there, Mom. And my dad said, told me, he said that he seen Glenda in the bedroom that night. And I said, it can't be, she didn't come home. So after that, we waited for about a week, waiting for her.
When Glenda's family called the police to report her missing, it was already too late. It is suspected that Glenda's murder was sexually motivated and that her body was dumped after she was killed by blunt force to the head. Glenda was discovered clothed only in her t-shirt, jacket, and socks. Her hands were tied behind her back, her body badly decomposed.
We were upset because it was suggested that she was a prostitute. And why? Because she was Aboriginal girl, you know, going home from a party at, you know, maybe one or two in the morning. And where? In the North End. So it's like she had three strikes against her for those reasons. And I remember just feeling so outraged just about that, like how, you know, how dare they say that? But at the time it was like we had no way of kind of expressing our anger or like, you know, challenging that because we just didn't know how to do any of that.
Mischaracterization by the media is common in the cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Law enforcement officers concentrate on the facts and work tirelessly to bring justice, but they can't do it alone.
The reality is we need everybody's help, and that includes the public, friends, family, anybody. Anybody with any kind of information will gladly take every piece we can get.
With so much time passed since Glenda's murder, could there be anyone out there still with tips? Can a leading activist offer insight into why Indigenous women are often so targeted for violence? How do Glenda's loved ones cope when hers is not the only violent murder in the family? On the night of July 17, 1991, 19-year-old Glenda Morso went out with family and left the Stock Exchange Hotel on Arlington Street and Logan Avenue in Winnipeg near closing time. Her sister Doreen saw Glenda get into an older model, dark-colored station wagon and never saw her again. Weeks later, on August 7, 1991, Glenda's battered, half-naked body was found at an isolated site in St. Boniface at the end of Yeovil Street near the Seine River. More than 20 years later, the search for Glenda's killer continues. If you have any information that might help solve the case of the murder of Glenda Morso, visit our website. Even though Glenda's murder was decades ago, her big sister Doreen Morso lives with the pain of losing her every day. She cherishes her happy memories.
We used to always watch TV, my brother Dalton and Maxine. And Glenda was always running around. She was the little hide and seeker. And if no one paid attention to her, she'd go and poke them and say, "Hey, it's the boogeyman."
Glenda's cousin, Kelvin Alexander, remembers a sweet, fun-loving girl.
She's a really awesome person, always giggling, laughing. Her nickname was Boogeyman. We used to call her Boogeyman all the time, or Boogs. And yeah, she was pretty nice. Really cool, awesome, spirited person. Really friendly, nice. I couldn't see her even being violent or anything at all, period. Like, really laughing, joking person.
We called her Boogeyman from there, and she grew up with that name, Boogeyman. And today, I have her picture. She's 5 years old, and I look at that picture. I am my boogeyman, I tell her. And it makes me happy when I see. I keep her in front of me all the time. I look and I say a prayer.
Glenda, like any other girl her age, had big dreams and was working toward her goals. She was a girl like any other, having fun. How could someone have taken her life so violently? When Glenda was sexually victimized, then murdered in 1991, the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in Canada had already been widely discussed in families and communities across the country. The case of Helen Betty Osborne, a young woman who left her home community of Norway House Cree Nation to study nursing in the Paw and was brutally murdered, raised awareness of the issue in 1971. Governor General Award-winning advocate and executive director of Mama Wichita Center in Winnipeg, Diane Redsky, speaks to some findings that were sparked by this tragedy.
The Aboriginal Justice Inquiry back in the late 90s concluded that the death of Helen Betty Osborne was due to the society's view that Aboriginal women were promiscuous and really liked the violence, and that they actually had no human value beyond sexual gratification.
Glenda was the victim of a violent sexual attack and a brutal beating that left her dead. However, it is possible that her murderer did not specifically intend for Glenda to die.
Speaking from my experience and as a homicide investigator, It's a very fine line. The reality is a lot of times people are murdered, that the person didn't mean to kill them at that point. It's a fine line. Sometimes it's as simple as one punch. So I don't know if there really is an answer to say why did this happen versus that. It's a circumstance surrounding it sometimes is what happens. But it's a very fine line with people's actions, what the end result can be.
Glenda's friend, Rebecca Chartrand, remembers the day of her funeral. A teenage girl lay to rest.
We didn't know how to handle this, you know, one of our friends being murdered, because we were still young people, you know? And we went to the funeral, and when we left, we decided to go swimming. And so we went swimming, and we didn't know where we were going, we just knew there was water that way. So we're driving down 59, and we took a dirt road, which eventually took us to a lake. We just decided to jump in the water, and we started swimming. And it was almost like, I don't know, it was just, it was almost like the sun was shining brighter, or, you know what I mean? Like, we were in the water, and we just came from, like, one of our close friends' funeral, and we didn't know how to react, but I just felt like we were celebrating, you know, like we were celebrating her life, and I guess it felt good to do that, you know, just to be together. Didn't know what to say to each other. We just kind of hung out and kind of just swam.
Glenda's murder was heartbreaking to everyone who knew her. Years later, her cousin Kelly Morisseau's death devastated her family all over again. How have Glenda's loved ones tried to heal from her tragic death and her cousin Kelly's? Nineteen-year-old Glenda Morisseau was found murdered on August 7, 1991, in an isolated industrial area of St. Boniface in Winnipeg, weeks after having last been seen near the Stock Exchange Hotel on Arlington Street and Logan Avenue, a short drive away. This historic homicide case is still active, and Glenda's family longs for closure. If you have any information that might help solve the case of the murder of Glenda Morisseau, visit our website. Sergeant Sean Pike believes that the key to solving Glenda's case is out there.
We know with every investigation, and Glenda's is no different, that there are people out there who know what's happened to Glenda. The reality is that it's so important for people to come forward with this, with information, especially in an historical homicide, because what may not have been important 5 years ago, 10 years ago, in Glenda's case back in 1991, can be very important today. And people may have that information and not realize it. It could be as simple as seeing somebody at a certain location, hearing a certain conversation sometime after the fact.
Over the years, many tips have come in on Glenda's case, yet the search for answers continues.
When you're working on investigations like Glenda's, this isn't a 9-to-5 job, it really isn't. I mean, we have people that are investigators, they're spending their weekends with their family, maybe they're taking their kids to hockey, whatever the case may be, that we stop what we do and we'll talk to each other on the weekend, we'll talk to people, other officers that are working on the weekend that have information they want to share with us. That's how we move these investigations forward. And in effect, we're thinking about it or potentially working on these 24/7. It all depends when the information comes.
Glenda's murder was devastating to her family. Years later, Glenda's brother Dalton and her sister Maxine passed away, leaving Doreen as the only remaining sibling. And Glenda's niece, Kelly Morisseau, was murdered in Gatineau, Quebec on December 10, 2006. She was 7 months pregnant at the time. The weight of all of this loss is difficult to bear for Doreen Morisseau, but she has moments of peace.
I actually had a dream. My dad, Glenda, Dalton, and Maxine, they're all together on a boat laughing. And I think they're waiting for me or something. Because I had that dream that we're all together. Really, it's upsetting and it's joyful to have that dream. But when I wake up, I think, I feel like I'm better off sleeping and having them there with me. I'm more happy there. Yes, I am.
Glenda's family carries on by taking care of one another and being involved in the community, including Drag the Red, a nonprofit volunteer-run organization aimed at finding clues and potentially the bodies of the missing and murdered in Winnipeg by dragging the Red River and its banks. Drag the Red was inspired by the discovery of 15-year-old Tina Fontaine's body in the Red River.
Tell you that the first day I did it, dragging the Red, I felt so much emotion when I got off the boat and jumped on my bike. I couldn't stop crying all the way home. And when I got home, I still couldn't stop. All evening I was crying and tears were coming out of my eyes profusely. When I dragged the Red, I stirred up a lot of stuff that just came out on me. And I didn't know how to, it was overwhelming. But yet it felt good at the same time, that experience. And then after I spoke to a couple of people, because of what I've been doing with the Drag the Red and what I've been touching and what I stirred up out there, I know that's what it was. You know what I mean? That's all those souls in there, those spirits. That's what I felt, and I know that's what it was. And I couldn't stop crying, and I wasn't hurt, I wasn't sad. It was just something that just came out of me, big time. That was pretty hard. That was my first day.
Glenda's friend, Rebecca Chartrand, started her healing journey shortly after Glenda's murder by helping create a theatrical collective, Red Roots Theatre.
Red Roots Theatre was like a grassroots community, Indigenous, predominantly youth from the North End, who were just wanting to do something, right, about different issues. And so we got together and we ended up creating a play called Those Damn Squaws.
And Those Damn Squaws was about Indigenous women experiencing racism. The monologue that I had developed in the play was based on Glenda's story.
And the play was all about the experience of Indigenous women experiencing racism in their various forms, right? And so one of them evolved out of the idea that our Indigenous women are easy targets because, I mean, it's telling in the numbers today that we know exist out there, but we knew it then, right? We knew it then amongst us. You know, we knew that that we didn't always feel safe, or that we could feel prejudice, or we could feel, you know, experience discrimination that would just be overlooked in other situations. I think that was one of the ways that I tried to address it, getting involved and trying to find ways to express it and to say that this is such an injustice.
More than 20 years after Glenda's murder, her friend Rebecca is still hopeful that someone might come forward with answers.
I would just hope that whoever knows anything would come forward. And Glenda was so petite and pretty and full of life and, you know, full of energy. And, you know, she would talk to people because she just believed in the best. And for somebody to abuse that kind of trust is sick. And I just, you know, I would hope that person would get help and that they would be brought to justice.
Important thing for us at this stage is to get as much information as we can. Even if it doesn't come in the most convenient way for the police, it's not about that sometimes. It's about just getting the information. But there's websites out there that they can reach out to us. The Taken series, this is what you're doing here today is a prime example of it. From season one, I know that we have received information and we're grateful for that, and we follow up that information.
More than two decades after her murder, Glenda's family and friends love her still. If they could say one thing to her.
I feel like her dreams are coming true, you know? In the young women that are growing up now. And I was so happy to see an all-girl band of young Indigenous women, you know? And when I seen that, I was like, wow, you know, like, It made me think about Glenda.
Boogeyman, let's go chill, man. Let's go chill. We'd get the family together. Let's go hang out and chill and do something. Like, we'd do a family thing. We'd go eat somewhere. We'd go have some drinks together. We'd be doing something together as a family, joking, laughing, teasing. I'm still sure she'd be Boogeyman. Like, oh, yeah. She'll still be Boogeyman.
Glenda, I'm still here. I will keep going and going for you. I won't stop. My Boogeyman, I won't stop. I love her, I love you.
If you have any information that might help solve the case of the murder of Glenda Morisot, visit our website.